You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Coming up, we'll find out what Governor Walker's budget could mean for mental health care for children. That's part of our weekly roundup of Wisconsin news.
First, it's Food Friday. The microbiome is one of the big buzzwords of the moment, with a lot of attention to positive bacteria and other microorganisms that live inside us and help us out. But it's not always clear how can we help those good guys out.
Research shows that both physical health and mental well-being depend on the health of the gut and the microbes that live in it. And our next guest says it's not too difficult to create the right environment for them.
Pete Evans is an Australian chef, restaurateur, television presenter, and health coach, and he's the co-author with Helen Patterin of The Complete Gut Health Cookbook, everything you need to know about the gut and how to improve yours. He joins us now. Pete, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we talk to a lot of chefs and cooks on Food Friday, Pete. We don't always talk about how the food interacts with our gut. Why is that important for you as a chef to focus on?
Well, I think it's the most probably important thing that we should be talking about, especially for chefs that are cooking other people's food. I mean, it goes without saying that food is medicine, and the food that we eat is either going to create health or keep us in a healthy state or create sickness. I mean, it is as simple as that. And I think a lot of people either do not want to swallow that part of the pun, but it really is that simple. So, I'm surprised that there's not more chefs that are promoting this way of life, because I feel it's our responsibility as people that cook food for other people, but we need to take this seriously.
Well, Pete, we don't have a direct line to our gut to tell us exactly how we're doing. How can you tell if you have a healthy mix of bacteria or not in your gut?
Well, in actual fact, we do have a direct line. There's no more direct line than how we're feeling on a day-to-day basis. All you need to do is look at the mirror, see how your appearance is, feel how you're feeling each and every day. Do you wake up with energy? That should be your first and foremost indicator that something is out of whack. Of course, food is important, but we need to look at sleeping patterns, how we move. Are we getting enough sunshine or vitamin D? What are our thought processes like? Do we have healthy emotional relationships? Removing stress out of our lives, all of these things. But definitely food is the one thing we can have the ability to change each and every day, except if you're a child and you're being fed by your parents, or if you're sick or perhaps elderly, or you don't have the capacity to cook for yourself. And then hopefully the people that are cooking for you know what they're bloody doing. So to go back, we definitely do have a direct connection with our guts, and this is what's so fascinating about this subject. So we've got the science now that says that what we eat, we actually have 80% of our immune system in our guts, and we also have so many brain cells, but serotonin resides in our gut,
like a lot of hormones,
so,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, so basically what we're eating will have a direct response on how we feel, both mentally and also emotionally and also physically. But it's amazing that the emotional, the mental, is very often overlooked. And we're seeing amazing research at the moment with especially dairy and grains, for instance, especially gluten-containing grains, that they can affect how we feel on a day-to-day basis. So we're talking about depression, anxiety, mood swings, irritability, and that goes into sleep patterns and a whole lot of other things. So, we do have a direct connection.
We're talking to Pete Evans. His new cookbook is The Complete Gut Health Cookbook, everything you need to know about the gut and how to improve yours. Pete, what is the good stuff that you're wanting to cook with? Spell out some of the main ingredients of this gut-healthier diet.
Really, basically, what we're promoting here is an anti-inflammatory diet. Now, the most common foods or food groups that cause gut inflammation or body inflammation have been shown time and time again that dairy, for instance, and also grains, especially grains, these two food groups, if you want to take them out of your diet for the rest of your life is what I would recommend, and then stick to the basics. Stick to abundant, colourful, organic vegetables or homegrown if you've got the capacity to grow as many as you can. So fill the plate with vegetables and then have a side serving of well-sourced seafood or meat. What I mean by well-sourced, I mean find an animal that has actually had the luxury of having a natural diet of what they've evolved to eat. So I'll say that again, an abundance of beautiful, colourful vegetables, low-carb variety in a greater ratio than the higher-carb variety, and then a side serving of well-sourced seafood or meat, including the good quality fats. And if you can stick to that for your breakfast, for your lunch, for your dinner, generally after about 4 to 6 weeks, you'll probably only have to eat 2 meals a day of this because you're going to be getting all the nutrients you need, whereas we live in a society where, with the current Western-style diet, most people are eating 3 to 5 meals a day or packing between them, and they're wondering why they're never getting satisfied. And because, again, research shows that the Western-style diet is 70% refined or starchy carbohydrates. We're teaching ourselves to be constantly hungry and searching for food. So once we eliminate the most common inflammatory foods, we fill the plate with those vegetables and a side serving of meat or seafood. That basically is the gut-healthy protocol. Now, there's two other things we add to that if you want to take it a step further. And the first one is fermented foods or probiotics. A lot of people are buying probiotics that basically do nothing. You're making some manufacturer quite rich. And it has very little bearing on your gut microbiome, even though they're selling it as that. But if you learn how to make your own fermented probiotic foods, such as sauerkraut or kimchi or even some beverages, number one, you're going to save a lot of money. Number two, it's actually delicious. And number three, it actually does something for you, and because you're eating it in a whole food form. So, for instance, sauerkraut or kimchi, we know these foods are very ancient and they're very easy to make. And I think we're going to talk about a recipe later on. So once you eat that, you're getting a prebiotic and a probiotic in a very cheap whole food form that's very bioavailable for us. And you'll be amazed at the research that's coming out about this. And so the second thing that we like to add is the simple process of enjoying some broth made from the bones of animals, whether it's from the sea animals or land-based animals. Basically, we're making a soup, and we're going to incorporate that, a cup of that, into our diet each and every day. Now, that's really simple, because if you think about it, all cultures around the world or the globe have some form of animal-based bone broth soup. And we know that bone broth is so good for us because it's got collagen, it's got gelatin, it's got glucosamine, it's got the building blocks that we love. And basically what that does is it helps to heal up the gut from any long-term chronic Western-style diet's effects, because it's got these building blocks that our guts love. And then with the addition of the probiotic vegetables, for instance, the krauts, that helps to colonize the gut with the good, healthy bacteria. And once you're eating, once you've removed those common inflammatory triggers, the dairy and the grains, what you're left with is those beautiful foods that just nourish us. So after about 3 to 4 weeks of doing this, your gut starts to get on top of what it's meant to do, which is actually to absorb the nutrients from the food. And then you're on your way to a happy and healthy lifestyle.
Pete, where would you suggest people start in their kitchen if they want to go step by step here and take it a little bit slow? What would be a good first step in changing their kitchen and starting this healthy healthy digestive course, if you will?
I'd go back to basics. I mean, we've all heard of meat and three vegetables. And there's a reason why that is so popular. One is because it's so easy. And number two, it's basically how our great-grandparents and their great-grandparents would always eat. There'd always be some sort of meat on the table or seafood, and there'd always be some sort of vegetables that they would have got from the markets. So if we take it back to, say, the simple meat and three veg, but I would probably remove the potatoes because they're not really nutritious for us, and replace the potatoes with some broccoli or some kale or some silver beet, some cucumber or some tomatoes or some cauliflower or some whatever it may be that's beautiful and colourful that you can get from your local market or supermarket or grow yourself. If you, I mean, I really can't make it any more simpler than maybe having some sort of meat and three veg, and the meat can be a piece of fish, or it could be some shrimp, or it could be some mussels, or it could be some lobster or crab, and I know that's pretty expensive and out there, but maybe even just a simple piece of Atlantic salmon, and then add to that some beautiful vegetables or a type of salad, if you like. I mean, it can be as simple as cooking a piece of fish and then having a cucumber salad on the side with some avocado, maybe. It would be very, very simple to do that on a day-to-day basis. You could cook some beautiful sausages. You could cook some beautiful, have a roast once a week. And then from that roast, say a roast chicken, you can use the bones from that to make your broth. It's really, really simple. So just go back to basics. And of course, you can include eggs into this because it's a good quality source of protein and fat. And with the eggs itself, if you're not intolerant to them, put them into your breakfast, but add some vegetables to it. And also a little bit of meat, if you like. So just go back to meat and three veg and eggs, if you like.
We're talking with chef and health coach Pete Evans about the tips and recipes in his book, The Complete Gut Health Cookbook.
We'll check out a couple recipes in a few moments, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for a guest about the diet he's recommending here to cultivate friendly gut bacteria? Have you tried to change your diet with these things in mind? And do you eat fermented foods? Do you make your own fermented foods at home? Do you have some sauerkraut brewing right now? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up this conversation in just a bit here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Right now, we're picking up our conversation about cultivating a healthy digestive system and the foods that help support it.
And we'd like to hear from you on this Food Friday at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions. Have you tried eating more fermented or other microbe-rich foods? What results are you seeing? Have you found some favorites? What would you like to ask our guest about how food helps create a healthy gut and overall well-being? Maybe get some cooking advice while you're there. Call 800-642-1234, or you can tweet us at Central Time WPR, or go to our Facebook page and find a couple recipes.
Pete Evans stays with us. He's an Australian chef, restaurateur, and health coach. He's the co-author of The Complete Gut Health Cookbook. Pete, let's get into classic kimchi. What do you love about this recipe?
Oh, I mean, as a chef, it just ticks all the boxes. From a health point of view, it also ticks the boxes. So we're seeing a resurgence in these types of foods, especially in the top-end restaurants around the world. I host a TV series in the US called Movable Feast, which is on PBS, and also one in Australia, and we're seeing these fermented foods really coming back into fashion. So kimchi, for instance, it's basically cabbage and salt is the base of most fermented vegetables, actually. And then all you do is add your spice. And your spice that you add, basically you pick the culture or the cuisine that you love, and then you flavour accordingly. So for a beautiful traditional Korean kimchi, for instance, we might add some Korean chili powder into that, organic always, if you're going to be using any type of chilies. And then you can add some ginger, some grated ginger into that. You could also add a little bit of garlic if you choose to, some turmeric, which we know has great antibacterial properties and anti-inflammatory properties. To that as well, you could add some daikon or white radish, which is very popular in Japanese and also different Asian cultures. And then some grated carrot as well to give it some beta-carotene, and also maybe even some cucumber as well. I mean, I've seen it done so many different ways. And from that, basically, by using cabbage and salt as the starting point, when you massage your cabbage with the salt, the cabbage already has this wonderful organic bacteria on it. Now, what happens with this wonderful process of fermenting? Basically, you massage the cabbage with some salt, and the recipe you're going to share with your listeners, you start the breaking down process of the cellular fibers in the cabbage. And what happens is the liquid is reduced, or the water is reduced from the cabbage. And then after a while, basically, you have this really nutrient-rich sort of vegetable broth that's happening with your hands. And then what we do is put it into a glass jar, and we make sure that it is submerged under its own juice, so to speak, with the different spices if you want to spice it up, as I mentioned. And then you leave it in a room temperature place with the lid on. You can get special fermenting jars, if you like, off the internet. Otherwise, you just use a really good, clean, sterile glass jar always. You never use plastic because the lactic acid bacteria that you're creating in there can leach the toxic plastic chemicals from the plastic, which you don't want in your food. So always do glass or some sort of earthenware crock. And then every day for the week, just crack the top of the lid just to let the CO2 release or the build-up of the gas release. But you don't want any outside oxygen to get in because it's an aerobic, anaerobic situation. Mm-hmm. I think that's the right terminology. I always get anaerobic and aerobic mixed up, but you don't want any oxygen in there. And then after about 7 to 10 days, depending on how hot your room temperature is, you should have a really nice sort of tart, sour, salty, beautiful condiment that you add to the side of your vegetables and meat on your plate. And that adds as another form of vegetables getting into your diet, but it's a powerhouse of probiotic goodness. Now, your gut bacteria loves this stuff, and it's just, I don't know how to explain it, but put it this way. Myself and my family and people that are eating this way, eat it with every meal. So we basically start off with, for a regular adult, you might start off with half a teaspoon until your guts get used to it, and then you might build up to maybe a tablespoon or two of this per meal per day. And it becomes something that you sort of, you get a little bit of addicted to, because we have this this funny thing in the Western-style diet where we're addicted to sugary, sweet carbohydrates. Whereas in actual fact, once you remove them and you start putting in bitter, sour, astringent foods, you actually start to crave these foods because your body actually loves it. And it's a really great way to get off any sugar addiction or any carb craving that you have.
And we've got a recipe for that kimchi on the Central Time Facebook page, talking to Pete Evans about his book, The Complete Gut Health Cookbook. And I want to get to some of our callers, Pete. AJ is on the line in Columbus. AJ, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to ask about, AJ?
Oh, I wanted to ask your guest about kombucha, because I've heard that
Beautiful.
It's really great for your gut health as well. So I just wanted to hear his comment about that.
AJ, thanks. And kombucha, it's a fermented beverage, right, Pete?
Yeah, it's a fermented tea that basically originated, I think it was in China, and then it migrated through Russia and different parts of the world. And I know in the States you've got some great kombuchas on the shelves themselves, but I'd always recommend, if you can, start making your own, because there's the stuff on the shelves you might see has a high sugar content. So kombucha I always look at as basically like a tonic or a medicinal addition to your regular diet. A lot of people think there's a magic pill out there that if they have the kombucha or every day they have their apple cider vinegar, they can continue to eat a Western-style diet and everything's hunky-dory, which is not actually the case. What I would recommend is going back to that basic formula of the vegetables with a side of seafood or meat, and add some good quality filtered water that's fluoride-free and chlorine-free as well, and then add in these medicinal or tonics, herbal tonics, such as kombucha, which is a fermented tea and really easy to make and really cheap. And then you've also got these other wonderful probiotic beverages called kefirs or kefirs. And you get a dairy-free version of that, and they're really easy to make at home as well. And then you have maybe an ounce or two of that per day, and it just gives another different beneficial strains of bacteria into your diet. But I can't emphasize enough that good quality, clean drinking water is your go-to with a little additional side of these tonics.
Well, thank you, AJ, for your call. Let's go to Kara now in La Crosse. Hi, Kara.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question, everything that you're saying sounds wonderful. My only thought is I have a 12-year-old daughter who is very much so on the thin side, and I'm trying to come up with some healthy options, healthy calories for her, and it doesn't sound like vegetables have a lot of calories, and so I'm just wondering what your advice would be for me on that.
Sure. So, and don't take this the wrong way, but if you're counting calories generally, you've got the wrong information. So if you're eating a nutrient-rich diet, you should never have to count calories. So So as a father of two daughters myself, one is 12 and one is 10, this is how we eat. And they're lean, but they're very athletic. I mean, yesterday my daughter ran in, competed in six different swimming carnival races. Then we went surfing after that. And today I've just dropped her off at dancing for the next 4 hours. So they're very active children, but they are quite lean. But I'll give you an example of breakfast today. I just cooked her breakfast about an hour ago because I'm calling from Australia here. So she had three eggs plus a little bit of really good pasture-raised bacon on the side, and we also had some collard greens, or what you might call, that have grown in the garden, and a little bit of avocado on the plate and some fresh herbs and that sauerkraut that we talk about. So the kids eat this at every meal. So if you're worried about your children being underweight, or it's hard for me to say unless we've done the proper tests, but if you're feeding them good quality fats in the form of animal fats that come from healthy animals, from land or sea, if you're also including eggs if they can tolerate it, and other forms of fat such as avocados, olives, coconuts, nuts and seeds if your daughter or children can tolerate them as well, and then going back to that lower carbohydrate approach of good quality vegetables, and then protein on the side of that. Now, I just have to stipulate this, that children, breastfeeding women and also pregnant women need to up their protein intake than being a small side serve on the side. So children need good quality protein. They also need great quality fats as well. So don't be scared to put an extra skewer of meat on the plate, or an extra sausage on the plate, or an extra piece of fish, or whatever it may be.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to Pete Evans for joining us today. He's a chef, restaurateur, and health coach. We've been talking about the book he just co-authored. It's called The Complete Gut Health Cookbook. You can find, by the way, a couple of recipes on the Central Time Facebook page, the classic kimchi if you want to try some fermenting at home, and he also had a cabbage bacon soup. This is great for, well, winter here. Not winter in Australia
Not
right
winter
now.
Winter in Australia right now.
But cabbage bacon soup. This is one I think I might try making. Also, some of his broths. Are you going to ferment at home?
I don't ferment, but I do eat kimchi.
All right. I like it in small doses, like he was saying.